You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Things are heating up. Now Governor McKee has fired back at Attorney General Pina Norona. I want to credit Channel 12. They've been all over this story. And now the war words between the two. This all has to do with the fact that McKee let this Guatemalan sex offender out of jail when ICE was saying, do not release this guy. And now the war words, as I said, is really starting to heat up. I want to play again. Channel 12, they're the ones that broke the story. So let's give it the latest.
Enforcement or ICE put out a statement last week announcing they'd caught the suspect, Manuel Garcia de la Cruz, and criticizing Rhode Island officials for releasing him last year. The AG echoed that criticism, but now the governor is firing back. Why did Rhode Island officials release Manuel Garcia de la Cruz from custody, even though ICE had a detainer on him? The Guatemalan national is facing charges of child molestation, but was granted bail by a judge last April.
And I would not speculate on anything until we hear that actual timeline.
After criticism from federal immigration authorities, Governor Dan McKee's office on Thursday released a sheriff's report from April 26th, the day Garcia de la Cruz posted bail in district court. According to the report, after Garcia de la Cruz posted bail, the deputy sheriff called ICE because the suspect had a separate federal immigration detainer notice. But the ICE agent said his agency was short-staffed and they would not be able to pick him up. After that, the governor's office says state agencies had no choice but to release Garcia de la Cruz, citing a 2014 federal court ruling that they say means, quote, Rhode Island cannot hold a person in custody based upon an ICE detainer alone.
Do I think they should review how it happened? I sure do.
In an interview with 12 News Tuesday, Attorney General Peter Norona suggested McKee needed to explain why the Department of Corrections and Division of Sheriffs let the suspect go.
You know, and he is exactly right on that. For the governor to try to insist, it all comes down to what is involved, that McKee is going along with what Chafee put out in 2014. And I think it's also really important with this Channel 12 piece that, in essence, they decided to let him go at the courthouse when he posted bail. But what the governor was not saying is the reason they did that is because of what Governor McKee has in place at the ACI, he would have been released at the ACI. So the McKee people are trying to say, oh, well, you know, if that he was released at the courthouse, not at the ACI. But the fact of the matter is, if they had released him, if he had gone back to the ACI, because Governor McKee goes along with that provision of Chafee, therefore, that's why then he would have been released. But if the ACI didn't have the Chafee provision, so to speak, well then, he would have been sent back to the ACI and he would have been held. Now, I do like the fact that I want to commend the Rhode Island Republican Party. They are finally speaking out, finding their voice, and whether it's Rep. Chippendale or State Senator Jessica De La Cruz, but they are finally speaking out and trying to pin down Governor McKee. What is the policy? Now, I'm telling you, Governor McKee will not admit it, I don't believe, but he is running a sanctuary state. And you could say, well, he inherited a sanctuary state. Nonetheless, he's still running a sanctuary state. So what are the plans that should some of these buses start to show up? And I'm glad that Channel 10 is now jumping in on this story. So let's pick it up with the latest with Joanna Burris. Here we go.
Lawmakers told me they want to know if Rhode Island is a sanctuary state, and if so, would they cooperate with federal authorities?
House Minority Leader Mike Chippendale and Senate Minority Leader Jessica De La Cruz are re-upping their demand for answers regarding illegal immigrants. This comes after a Guatemalan national charged with child molestation in Rhode Island was released last April, even though he should have been held on a federal immigration detainer. They want to know if this could keep happening or...
Are we going to cooperate with ICE? Are we going to cooperate with the federal government? Or are we going to ignore detainers and let alleged criminals go?
The lawmakers say they met with two of Governor Dan McKee's staffers last month because he's too busy to meet with them himself. They say they want to know what will happen if a bus, plane, or train filled with migrants gets dropped off here.
You know, they articulated a plan for how to deal with any such influx for the first 48 hours, but there was really no plan after that.
Chippendale says they're told the migrants get a health screening and a background check. But what happens after that isn't known. He says that's unacceptable when there are Rhode Islanders in need of help now.
In the legislature, we're immersed in the issues right now of dealing with homeless Rhode Islanders. We have 113 veterans in Rhode Island who are homeless. We have 1,800 people, Rhode Islanders, sleeping on the street on any given night. 4,000 people in Rhode Island have been identified as unhoused. What is the plan of this administration to deal with an unexpected influx of folks when we ourselves cannot provide housing, health care, or basic services to actual Rhode Islanders?
At this point, we haven't gotten any confirmation.
You're not going to get anything from Governor McKee. I do like the fact, and I want to credit them for starting to try to up the ante a little bit. Number one, he doesn't have a plan. And number two, I noticed that they're not fully going with the real headline, which was, why doesn't he just clarify whether or not the state is operating as a sanctuary state? Well, I'm telling you, Governor McKee, number one, he doesn't like to be pinned down. That's number one. Number two, the stadium fiasco continues to just really, that is so unnecessary. Folks, do you see what's happening right now? I mean, it's not your imagination. Governor McKee is completely losing control of the state in every facet. And right now he's out of town. He's out of town at the national governors. It's either the Democrat governors or the national governors. He's in D.C. But either way, when he comes back, there's just it's what I have said. He's not up for the job. He is not assembled. I'll also say this, and I want to be very clear. He hasn't surrounded himself with the proper team to handle the job. I mean, that part, okay, there's always going to be things that pop up, and I get no one's perfect, but he's not even playing to win. He's absolutely playing to lose at this point, and he is losing, and we're all losing because of this. I mean, this is total insanity, but let's see if we can pin him down on an answer. I don't think he'll be forthcoming. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994. That's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial, fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. It's time for our legal segment. Joining us right now, he is one of Rhode Island's top attorneys. He's our legal expert. It is attorney Tim Dodd. And Tim, let's start off with this story. It was actually, I thought, kind of extraordinary that ICE put out a press release saying there was this Guatemalan illegal that was arrested. Providence Police, child molestation charges. They put a hold on him, but apparently the ACI let him out. They were able to then arrest him again. And this time they have him in ICE custody, and the story is evolving, where now you have Attorney General Peter Noronha sharing that his office actually went to court to try to fight this, and he's essentially pointing all fingers at Governor McKee. But people are wondering, how did something like this happen?
Well, you know, when something like this happens, the finger pointing starts. Everyone's looking to blame somebody else for what's clearly a series of unfortunate mistakes that have been made. You're right, John. This defendant was a Guatemalan national in our country illegally without permission. While in Rhode Island, he is arrested and charged with child molestation. And now the normal process begins. He is brought into court because of the nature of the child, of the charge, excuse me, child molestation. There's a bail hearing, and at that hearing, if the court is reasonably satisfied as to certain conditions, the court can determine that the defendant should be held without bail, released with personal recognizance, surety bail be posted, or some combination of everything. So the court has the hearing. And the court determines that the evidence and proof of guilt was evident, and the presumption of guilt was great. It's a very low standard in the law. The judge thereafter, instead of determining that this guy should be held without bail, which is what the AG recommended, the assistant AG who was handling the case argued that because of the nature of the charge, he was a danger to the community. And because of his status as being here illegally, that he was a flight risk. The judge, utilizing his or her discretion, set surety bail at $50,000, perhaps thinking that this guy would never make bail. However, he does make bail. He posts either the full amount or gets a bail bondsman, and boom, he gets out of jail. Now, that's where the disconnect begins. ICE had identified this guy and alerted the prison system that there was an ICE request for a detainer because of the fact that this guy was charged with this crime and he was known to be here illegally. Now, Rhode Island's a sanctuary state, and that has a lot of implications, which I think are unfortunate. He makes bail. The ACI releases him. Boom. Now he's on the street. Now he sort of doesn't show up for any more court appearances. And he's on the lam for, I think, a little over 10 months. He's now been picked up again by ICE. And now he's being held, I believe he's at the Wyatt Detention Center now.
Yes. Yep.
So Noronha, I think, is pretty well covered here because his the AG that he had do this hearing made the right request, made the correct argument, requested that this guy be held without bail. The judge determined that it should be a combination of surety bail in order for this guy to be released. Noronha is attempting to throw Governor McKee under the bus, saying this is McKee's fault because the prisons fall under his administration and he's ultimately responsible. Well, that's a good political talking point. And it's nice for Noronha to say, go ask McKee how this all happened. Now, McKee certainly is not involved in the day-to-day operations at the prison. The prison's saying it's not our fault because the sheriffs let him go. The sheriffs aren't saying anything. But it is true. Once surety bail is made, did the sheriffs know about the ICE hold? Was the ICE hold only made known to the ACI? We really don't know. really all the details, and we haven't heard from the sheriff's department, to the best of my knowledge. The Bureau of Prisons is being quiet for the moment, and I think that they're wise to keep quiet until they get their facts straight and get their talking points straight. But it's clearly an embarrassment that this guy somehow was put back on the street. And, you know, ICE, I think, properly puts out this news release saying, look at what happened here.
Yeah.
I mean, ICE is frustrated around the country with all of these sanctuary cities and sanctuary states not honoring their requests for detainers in many cases. ICE is trying to do the job and is being thwarted by state and local authorities. So I think there's enough blame to be assigned in many quarters at the moment until we get all of the facts out. And I think Rep. Dela Cruz is right to say there's got to be some sort of a hearing on this. How the hell did this happen? Will she get that hearing? I don't think she will. But I think it's a reasonable request because of the outrageousness of the whole travel of this case and how the facts have shaken out.
Folks, again, we're speaking with our legal expert, Attorney Tim Dodd. And Tim, I just want to also, one of the things that ICE and, or actually other reports have mentioned, how it was really in 2014 that then Governor Link Chafee announced that they were, the state was no longer going to go along with essentially cooperating almost with ICE. Now, Raimondo didn't do anything about it. Under Governor McKee, he didn't do anything about it. But the part that I think people should recognize is that Rhode Island does act differently than, say, a state like Florida or Texas. Or, you know, Rhode Island and Massachusetts seem to be more in line with, there are some states that cooperate with ICE and other states like Rhode Island, that it seems like Governor McKee, through executive order, could change that and say, all right, going forward, we're going to be fully, you know, cooperative with ICE.
Well, he could. In my view, he probably should, but politics being what they are, I'm not sure there'd be any appetite for a sitting governor to change the policy. But, you know, you raise a very valid point that this is something that Governor Chafee put into place, much to the consternation of ICE and federal authorities. I think as the influx of illegal entry into this country increases, I think around the country we're going to see more and more of this type of case where bad guys are somehow getting put back on the street by sanctuary cities and sanctuary states and ignoring ICE requests for a detainer. Maybe this will help to change the political attitude towards this issue. You know, back in 2014, this illegal entry problem was not as vast as it is right now.
Good point.
And it only seems to be getting worse.
Yep. Folks, quick break. Much more ahead on Legal Expert, Attorney Tim Dodd, right here on The John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus. We're speaking with our legal expert. It's Attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, our next story, confiscated marijuana was key evidence in a civil forfeiture trial. And then this is a story from the Providence Journal. And then they say, and then the police destroyed it. What is Tim Dodd's thoughts on this story?
Well, this guy Ritchie has been at odds with law enforcement for a considerable period of time. He's had, I believe it's tax issues. There's been attempts made to confiscate real estate that he owns on Douglas Pike. And he's no shrinking violet. He's been more than happy to go to war with state and town authorities looking to assert his rights. He apparently was a licensed marijuana grower. And he was growing marijuana at his commercial or industrial building on Douglas Pike. Police claim... they claim to have had a confidential informant advising that this guy, Ritchie, was growing marijuana in excess of what he was legally entitled to do. Now, the cops get a search warrant. The warrant is presented to a judge with an affidavit. The affidavit references that the attesting officer has knowledge from his or her confidential informant that this activity is going on. So the linchpin of getting the search warrant is the claim by law enforcement that they've got a confidential informant giving this information. The warrant gets signed. The search warrant is executed. The plants are confiscated, all the marijuana plants. Allegedly that there was more than one kilogram being grown by this guy, which would create a felony. The cops contend that he had between 1 and 5 kilograms of marijuana under cultivation. This guy lawyers up. He denies the charges. And in the pretrial process, he says, my lawyers want to... inspect the marijuana plants. We want to see the number that was confiscated, the weight of them, etc. The cops say, oh, sorry, we've destroyed all those plants. Defense counsel says, what are you talking about? You've destroyed evidence. How are we to determine whether the amount of marijuana by weight was above or below criminal standards? We've been denied our ability to put on our defense. They go further and they inquire of the cops about this confidential informant. And the cops who were involved in this investigation under oath then say that they never had personal discussions with the confidential informant. This case is so bad that Judge McElroy in federal court said on the record, there appears to be strong evidence that law enforcement lied or misrepresented about the confidential informant in this case in order to get that search warrant. So you got cops who even the judge is suspecting of lying to get a search warrant, lying that there was a confidential informant. And then the cops, either by design or error, destroyed evidence. Now, Ritchie would say, see, they're out to get me. They lie to get the warrant. They take my plants, they destroy them so I can't defend myself. They're just out to get me. Things don't look for law enforcement on this one, John, to say the least.
Folks, again, we're speaking with our legal expert, it's attorney Tim Dunn. Tim, we had talked about this potential arson case in North Providence where you have this temple and... you know, the police have seemingly have their suspect dead to rights, gas can. But then they also found some writings that he had done in his apartment. And the community had a big press conference on Friday. I'm just curious, update on the arson story and also the potential for hate crime to be enforced here.
Well, as we know, there was surveillance video that captured an individual splashing gas around and attempting to light this church on fire. The police, you know, the last case was bad representations of what cops do. This case is a good representation of what cops do. Apparently, the cops who are trying to get surveillance material, video from surrounding homes or businesses or ring doorbells or whatever the case might be, Just like in the Boston Marathon case, they got those guys because they looked at surveillance video from all of the businesses near the area where the explosions occurred. One cop in particular had a hunch and went, I think it was to like a Cumberland Farms to look at their surveillance video. And lo and behold, there's this guy in there minutes before the video at the church, buying, I think, a Bic lighter, and he had filled up a gas tank with gas that he had purchased at this Cumberland Farms gas station. So he's not the most sophisticated criminal, because everything that he did to buy the arson materials are all captured on this surveillance video at the convenience store. So now the cops in look into this further, and they find evidence of extreme racist ideology. That's what they call it. And I guess this guy's got all sorts of stuff on his social media posts about, you know, killing all of a particular group of people, burning their churches, and the most hateful, vicious, horrible, reprehensible language that you can imagine. It does appear that the case is building, that this will be prosecuted, I would presume, as a federal hate crime. The U.S. Attorney's Office is looking at it. Right now, this guy's only been charged with malicious damage by fire, but I would expect those charges will be upped and additional charges would be added to include at least one degree of arson, and all of the hate crime components that go along with it. So I think this guy has videoed himself or allowed himself to be videoed into what would probably be a significant prison sentence if he takes us to trial or gets some sort of a plea bargain. I guess one of his defenses might be some mental health.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm speculating, but I think that would be part of the package.
You should know. I interviewed the mother. The mother says that he's a musician, and what they were looking at, he was writing song lyrics. Is that possible?
Possible, but not probable.
All right, we'll revisit that. Tim Dodd, also, outrage grows over the TD Garden's strict new bag policy. This has caught a lot of people off guard.
Well, the Garden, all of these sports arenas and stadiums have a real problem in the potential for violence, for terrorism, for dangerous materials to be brought in surreptitiously. I mean, all of these places, Fenway Park, the Garden, I think Gillette, you can't bring in backpacks. You can't bring in handbags of a certain size. If you do, you've got to bring something in that's, I believe, clear. So it's either a clear, like, woman's clutch, if you will, or I think that you're allowed to bring in, like, a certain size of Ziploc bags. Again, have to be clear so that security can see what's going on. So the Garden has now instituted a new policy that if you're going to bring something in, it can't be bigger than 6 inches by 4 inches by 1.5 inches. So that would just about be big enough, I guess, to perhaps put in a cell phone and a credit card and your driver's license, and that's about it. The Garden is a private enterprise. They set the rules for admission. They set up metal detectors. They get to search your bag. They get to wand every individual going in there. No one is singled out. It's not that they're only doing this sort of search before admission to men or only to women. There's been some talk that this is only going to be seen as a tax on women because women are more likely to have a bag containing their personal effects of some sort.
Right.
But I don't think that's really a story that will sell in the long run, that this is a tax or an affront to women. I guess if you do go in there with an object or a bag that's larger than what's prescribed, you can, for a fee, I guess, put it in a locker or put it with security or something so you don't lose it. It's not thrown in a dumpster. but you can't bring it into the arena, and then you've got to pay for its safekeeping, and then you get it back, I guess, at the end of the night, which would be extremely cumbersome. I'm sure there'd be huge lines. It's going to be very frustrating for patrons. But this is a private facility. They set up their security policies. So based on what we know so far with this policy, can the Garden get sued? Sure. Anyone can get sued for anything, but I don't think any litigation would be very successful. They've got a legitimate interest in making sure the place is secure and that contraband's not getting in. If contraband does get in, that's when they're going to get sued, because then there'll be allegations that their security procedures were not good enough or stringent enough. So it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So people may not like this, but it's a sign of the times, and I expect that the policy will be enforced, and if legally challenged, the challenge would fail.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead, our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on The John DePietro Show. Do you need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today. 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. We're speaking with our legal expert and analyst. It's attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, our next story, I received email from people saying it's no one's business what type of pet this guy has, but in Central Falls, this guy had a surrender pet alligator. I actually heard from some people saying, hey, if he has a bathtub, wants to take care of it, it's no one's business.
Well, that's a nice thought, but it's not the law. You know, we see these stories occasionally. Some idiot will want to have a pet boa constrictor, and the boa constrictor kills him one night. There was another story in another state where the guy got bit by his exotic pet and it killed him. There was a story in Texas recently. I think the guy had a pet boar, like a, you know, like the types of boars that killed the guy in one of those Hannibal Lecter movies. So this pet boar, after years of being kept, decided one night to kill the guy. So here we've got this alligator, or in Central Falls. An alligator, amongst many other types of animals, is considered in Rhode Island to be an exotic animal because it's not native to this area. There's a whole statutory scheme which identifies what constitutes an exotic animal. That law has been on the books since, I believe, 2010. So unless you've had your alligator in your bathtub prior to 2010, you're keeping such alligator, in most cases, illegally. So this alligator now bites somebody. The guy voluntarily gives it up. I don't know what became of the alligator, but I don't know. But no charges are going to be brought against this guy, to my understanding. But he clearly was, if he had this alligator prior to 2010, in conformity with the law. If he acquired this thing after 2010, he's been in violation of the law. And I think it's a story that's good for people to know, because lots of people seem to want to have exotic animals. We hear stories from time to time that somebody wants to have a pet lion in their bedroom, or a pet tiger, or all kinds of crazy exotics that are dangerous animals, which can kill you. So I think this is just a good review for citizens to realize that these animals are dangerous and in most cases illegal for you to keep in your home.
Folks, we're speaking with our legal analyst attorney, Tim Dodd. Tim, I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in on President Trump, the massive fraud penalty. I'm looking at Daily News. He owes $87,000 daily interest on historic fraud penalties. What are we to make of this huge judgment against President Trump?
Well, certainly, the Trump team complains about many aspects of this case. One of their biggest complaints is they didn't get a jury trial. Thus, this particular judge got to try the case sitting without a jury, and he seemed to have an animus and a bias against Trump from the get-go. I don't think the lack of a jury will be a winner for the Trump team on appeal, because my understanding is in New York, you had to make a specific designation or check a box or something at the beginning of the case, which his team failed to do. And I think they failed to request the jury trial, so I don't think that issue is preserved on appeal. I think there's lots of other fact issues that a review in court will take interest in. When a judge hears a case without a jury, reviewing courts typically give great deference to the fact-finding determinations by the trial judge. Reviewing courts don't like to say the judge got the facts wrong. So the judge in this case spent multiple pages on his fact-finding role. Because he was so meticulous about the fact-finding element of his decision, it's going to be difficult for a reviewing court to overturn this based upon the judge's factual conclusions. The real question will be whether or not there has been a misapplication of the law, or a misapplication of the law as it applies to these facts, or whether the judge's fact-finding was clearly wrong. The reviewing court can say the judge was clearly wrong in his fact-finding, but it's not normally done unless there's a gross abuse and misconstruing of the facts. Trump will appeal. I think he's got two cracks at it. He can go to the New York Appellate Court, then he goes to the New York Supreme Court. I'm not sure there's an issue here which would give rise to this case making its way to the Supreme Court. In the short term, there's a judgment, and Trump has to either post bond, which I think would be difficult to do for $350 million, or post assets sufficient to satisfy the judgment. So would he then have to this give over? Let's assume he says, I'll use Trump Tower. That's worth $350 million. He could pledge that. He wouldn't lose it. Letitia James would not take it over. But he would have to pledge sufficient assets so that if he loses on appeal, assets are pledged in the first instance and they can then be confiscated by the state of New York. If Trump doesn't pledge or post bond, the state of New York can get an execution for $350 million and start grabbing Trump assets. So he's got to post. He's got to post assets. He's never going to get a bond, in my view. And he's only got 30 days to get his ducks in a row. So he could post cash or real estate or a combination of both. But he's got to put up properties or money so that if he loses, there'll be assets that the state of New York can grab.
Folks,
it's going to be very difficult for him to do that in a short 30-day window. Excuse me, John.
That's all right. Folks, again, we speak with our legal expert attorney, Tim Dodd. Tim, former U.S. Rep. George Santos, he started this thing. It's called Cameo. You pay money and various people wish you a happy birthday or give a message, so forth. So the people at Jimmy Kimmel, they pay what he wants and they have him do a bunch of messages and then they play it on the show at night. Santos is now suing, going after late night host Jimmy Kimmel, saying he deceived him into making these videos.
I don't think this litigation is going anywhere. I mean, he does this thing where for a fee, you know, you call, you however you go about
it. It's on an
doing
app,
this.
Yeah.
It's an app. So you could call and say, you know, hi, Rep, I want you to sing happy birthday to my brother-in-law, Harry. And for a fee, he'll do it.
Right.
Now, you may not have a brother-in-law, and his name might not be Harry, but for a fee, you're being asked to say certain words. So for a fee, this guy, Santos, said certain words in response to what was requested of him and for which he was compensated. Now, he's saying, I was defrauded because I didn't know that this was all for a joke. You misrepresented who you were. You misrepresented why this was happening. I don't think he's going to get far with this. I kind of hearken back to a couple of examples, like the Borat movie, where he was a totally phonied up who he was, where right. he was from, and he got these people to speak to him knowing they were on camera. They can't come after the fact and say you lied about who you were and you got us to say absurd, racist, horrible things. Or if you were, some of your viewers might recall the old Ali G show, which yes. was another Sacha Baron Cohen great show. He would get Andy Rooney. He would get Buzz Aldrin. He would get all sorts of internationally known people to sit down for these preposterous interviews, and they would answer ridiculous questions. But they knew they were being filmed. They knew they were being recorded. And none of those people, to my knowledge or memory, was ever able to successfully sue, saying you defrauded me, you embarrassed me, you held me up to ridicule because I fell for what you were doing. And I think the same thing's going to be true with this guy Santos. I don't think he's going to get anywhere.
Folks, we're going to leave it there. He is our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, excellent job as always, and we will talk to you again.
Thanks, John. Take care.
When it comes to insurance, you need a neighbor, a partner, and friend. You need Chapa Insurance Agency. They're located right on Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Call today, free consultation, 401-900-INSU, 401-900-4678, Chapa Insurance, SIA. Steven, very experienced, whether it's auto, home, renters, business insurance, flood, recreational, umbrella, any other protection for your assets, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, Chapa Insurance Agency, your agency of choice. Call today, set up a meeting. They're so knowledgeable, can have everything under one roof. Call Chapa Insurance today, 401-900-INSU or 401-900-4678. Look for them on Facebook, again, located Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Chapa Insurance Agency, your neighbor, your partner, your friend. One-stop insurance solutions. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Well, things continue to get worse for the McKee administration, and specifically what's happening with this bridge in the 195. Now, folks, as you know, a month ago, we told you that this thing needs to be replaced, complete demo. They denied it, and now the media have all gotten a copy of the fact that that's exactly what's going on. You know, it's they are consistently digging themselves in a hole. And what I mean by that is, as far as the McKee administration, they just continue to think that they can get away with things and mislead people and withhold information. And I don't, you know, at different times people debate, is it the governor? Is it his staff? Is it a company? It's got to be him. I mean, at some point, it has to, you know, begin and end with the fact that it has to be, in fact, that it's the governor that's part of this, that is in fact the one that is orchestrating this, because It makes no other explanation, and it has to be him, because otherwise you would terminate who was on your staff giving you such bad advice. Because every time the McKee people, this is just a pattern where the governor thinks that they can withhold information that the media is not going to find out. The media does find out. And then they're just scrambling. But it's not a one-off. It just continues to have, you know, to happen. And with the bridge, why they think that people are not going to find out about the fact of what's going on with the bridge is just, I don't have an explanation for it. And I don't, at this point, Governor McKee has lost the media. I'll tell you that much. And as much as he can pretend it doesn't matter, it doesn't in any way come into play, Channel 12 was the first one to get the draft. And then, you know, now the situation just keeps getting worse and worse. Again, I think you have to look at that it's the governor, that Governor McGree, Governor McKee, that he's the one making these decisions. I don't think you can look at it any other way. And what I really don't understand is, again, Mayor Smiley and Mayor DeSilva had to go to that press briefing, but then they find out from the media, not from Governor McKee. Let's listen to Channel 12 broke it. Let's hear some
learned,
of this.
And learned engineers who inspected the Washington Bridge are recommending massive repairs or a full replacement. An engineering firm hired by the state to assess the Washington Bridge has submitted its recommendations in a draft report dated yesterday. Let's get right to the heart of the findings by VN Engineering. They write, the repairs and strengthening required to address the documented deterioration and deficiencies along the superstructure are significant, have limited viability, and have significant risk associated with them. They go on to say, to fully eliminate these risks and improve inspection, maintenance, and repair access would require the demolition and replacement of the superstructure and potentially a full bridge replacement. Anything less than that, the report warns, could mean a potential collapse of the bridge. Now, the bridge superstructure is the main structural part of the bridge holding up the deck, so basically everything above the pillars that are holding everything up. The upshot, then, is this engineering firm says the bridge has to be totally redone. Needless to say, that is a massive project. Now, this is just the recommendation from the engineering firm. Governor Dan McKee has repeatedly emphasized that no decision will be made about the bridge until final reports have been submitted by the various consultants examining the bridge. Reached by phone, the author of the report directed all questions to the Department of Transportation, which we have reached out to. Again, this is a significant update in this ongoing saga with the Washington Bridge recommending a major overhaul or full replacement. This is a developing story. We'll have the very latest coming up on 12 News at 4 and on WPRI.com. I'm Tim White.
Steve. Excellent job. Now, folks, the thing about this that I also want to emphasize is that they chose not to. They could have, Governor McKee and the DOT, we'll link them. They could have come out with this at the brief. They just had a briefing the other day. They called the briefing. Update, they wanted to announce that they're going to start adding the lanes on each side. But what they didn't, you know, mention anything about was what I just told you. Again, Governor McKee wanted it to be, oh, okay, we're going to be three lanes on each side. And they had the information, but they decided to leave that out of the briefing. Now the Governor McKee is in D.C. for the National Governors Conference or some kind of gathering of that sort. And then it leaves his staff. I don't know what he could have been doing. It leaves his staff to then try to put out fires and deal with it. So it is going to need a full replacement. It's a major, major job. And every time there's a misstep like this, people are losing confidence in the governor, in the DOT. I think, and I'll tell you, the media certainly is losing confidence. I want to go to a little bit more, since Channel 12 broke it, a little more extensive with the Washington Bridge in this latest development now in Governor McKee. Let's hear it.
Dated Wednesday is giving state officials a stark assessment, writing the repairs and strengthening required to address the documented deterioration and deficiencies along the structure are significant, have limited viability, and have significant risk associated with them. They go on to write, to fully eliminate these risks and improve inspection, maintenance, and repair access would require the demolition and replacement of the superstructure and potentially a full bridge replacement. The report includes inspection images showing cracks on beams, significant erosion, and other damage throughout. On Wednesday, Governor Dan McKee and RIDOT Director Peter Alvedi announced they plan to add an additional lane in either direction on the eastbound bridge, a totally separate structure, to increase traffic capacity.
We should be able to do this work and complete the work so that we can open the six lanes to traffic. We're looking preliminarily at an 8-week time frame to do this in.
Thursday afternoon, a spokesperson for McKee told Target 12, Governor McKee and Director Alvedi have repeatedly stated that no decision concerning the Washington Bridge would be made until all final reports were received and evaluated. VN is one of seven engineering firms that are currently assessing the Washington Bridge. One section of the report warns of the potential for pieces of the westbound bridge to collapse onto Gaino Street or into the river, destabilizing the eastbound bridge. I will have more from that coming up.
There was a woman, a nice shot by Tim White, there was a woman that some things fell off and fell on her car, and the DOT just dismissed it. That was last June. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994, that's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year. I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant. Stop in and see Marie, that historic white church. Shop local, inside, all quality products, vitamins, herbal remedies, trusted companies. They understand quality, integrity. It's My Health. It's all about your health. Local products. Ice, honey, maple syrup, beef fresh gum. You know, they carry over 250 bulk herbs, teas, and spices that can be purchased by the ounce, plus box herbs and teas, hemp and CBD products, and much more natural skincare products. Stop in and see Marie at It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland. It's all about health for you, for your family. There's vitamins for children, all different types of teas, all different types of spices. Boy, what a difference it'll make. Shop local. Stop it and see the Queen of Health. It's Marie. And It's My Health, 1099 Menden Road in Cumberland, diagonally across from Davenport Restaurant, right in that historic white church. It's all about health. It's all about your health. At It's My Health. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, there they were on Saturday. If you log on to DePietro.com, a group showed up on Saturday, and of all places, outside the Cumberland Library. And there's a number of them, predominantly men, seem to be some young women there as well. All young, and they have some flags, and they called Pine, and they stood outside the Cumberland Library. Now, this panicked a lot of people, and again, you can read the story, see the photos on DePietro.com, and there's a couple things about this that I just want to mention. Now, this group, of which some people, and members of the media, by the way, were causing panic and saying that they were armed Nazis that were showing up there. Well, they're not. Pine, apparently, according to brochures they hand out, is the People's Initiative of New England. grassroots effort advocate for advance the interests of New Englanders. So I think this is kind of like a white supremacist group. New England is the whitest region in North America. Who's behind it? And I don't know what they also have a 5-point program, PINE. Again, it stands for People's Initiative New England. So, white homeland, sovereign state, pursue policies supposedly that are pro-family. Why do you wear masks? They cover their face due to the hostility surrounding the political climate. Some of the volunteers utilize face to protect families' livelihoods from potential attack by Antifa terrorists and other groups. Now, you certainly don't have that here in New England. Is it racist? They also have on their brochure, we are advocating for our people not taking anything away from other groups. We don't believe New Englanders should be ashamed of their history. What are your goals? We're promoting a 5-point political program. Again, this is all on their literature. So, but let me just touch on this. Now, first of all, there was a member of the media that shared this business of neo-Nazis, and it's a rally, and they're armed, which is very, very dangerous. It was actually the Rhode Island Painters Union, armed, masked neo-Nazis. Now, where that's really dangerous is what if Cumberland Police or some law enforcement agency saw that? Anyone that, you know, has followed, when we cover a lot of the police scenes, the scene changes dramatically if there's a weapon introduced. So what I mean by that is there's a big difference of there's a disturbance. There's a huge difference that then takes place if a weapon is displayed. If somebody pulls out a knife or let alone a gun, that really changes the dynamic. That ups the number of police that go, and how they behave at the scene is greatly altered. Now with this group, do I support this group? No, I don't. I think it's actually I think it's silly. And most of the time, these types of groups, they're social misfits. They're not accomplishing anything. Maybe they find by doing this, they're able to recruit some members. I think it's interesting there was some girls that were there, because normally it's guys that, you know, have never been on a date, never kissed a girl, certainly have no success in business of any kind. And so they find camaraderie in a group like this. And there's a couple of groups out there like this. You see I think the name of it is Patriot 131. They marched on the Boston Common, caused havoc. They have the Neck Gordier. And then you have, there's a group called 131. And they do the same thing. So number one, I have a problem with the people that cover their faces. Now, not all of them had their faces covered, by the way. The photo I'm looking at, I don't know what to make of this whole thing. But let me say this about the people that are condemning them. And that is, in our society, there's no indication that there was any violence. There's certainly no indication that they were armed. The police, the Cumberland Police, they're not going to allow a group of young men with weapons out standing there at the Cumberland Public Library. Would I want a group like that outside of my library if I was going in, or if I was going there with children or my children? No, of course not. I don't think it fits. I don't think it belongs there. However, if we're going to have, which we allow peaceful protests. They didn't seem to be truly causing any violence. They didn't seem to be harassing anyone. It's a little unsettling. Someone said to me, this is like the KKK. Not really. They're not in costumes. They maybe had their face covered. I don't like it, but much like, you know, I don't think there should be people on the streets that we've had supporting Hamas. We shouldn't have the people that are I don't like the people that are the communists and the socialists. I don't like the, you know, the BLM crowd is far more violent. We had some Antifa activity in this area the summer of 2020. I haven't seen any, and I say that as someone that would come face to face with them. So I'm not sure what to make of that. But if we're going to allow, which we do, in our country, you are allowed to peacefully gather and stand there. It's my understanding, I don't think they were making a lot of noise. They weren't doing anything obscene. And so for the media that are going after them, I think if you're going to go after them, you have to go to after all of them. Now, as someone that many times follows or covers many of these different types of groups, I mean, it's not even close. When I, back in October, when I covered that protest, 800 Hamas supporters and chanting death to the Jews. Now, to me, and there were problems, and there were arrests. Now, to me, they're far more dangerous than 15 people, maybe, total, standing on a hill at the Cumberland Library. And I also want to touch on the people. I posted this on both Facebook and Instagram. You know, there are people posting feds. Those are the fit. Like, that is embarrassing you actually think that. Oh, yeah, the FBI. They're at the Cumberland, Rhode Island Library on a Saturday. First of all, none of the people standing there would ever qualify to be an FBI agent and or a police officer. For people to actually think that, it's embarrassing. I don't know how else to say it. I think they're embarrassing. And people say, someone put, they're paid Democrat actors. You think that's where they would put their resources? Outside the Cumberland Library. Feds. Those, oh yeah, that's the FBI is standing outside posing as a white supremacy group outside a library in Cumberland, Rhode Island. If you think that, you need your head examined. I don't know what to make of people that actually would believe that. Ludicrous. No. It's social misfits looking to belong, and they have found themselves together in this group. That's what this is. Again, you can see the article and photos on DePietro.com. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. A lot of talk about the president's age. Someone I believe is waiting in the wings, Governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Now, he was in D.C. for the National Governors Association. Governor McKee was there as well. But that meant he could go in studio with Meet the Press. Let's pick it up. Gavin Newsom on Meet the Press. He's not worried about President Biden's age or ability to beat President Trump.
There are some pretty stark numbers that you're facing. 76% of voters say they have real concerns about President Biden's ability to serve a second term. Do you think it's responsible for Democrats to put him at the top of the ticket given those concerns?
Responsible. I revere his record. I mean, this, what he's done in 3 years has been a masterclass, close to 15 million jobs. That's 8 times more than the last 3 Republican presidents combined. The economy is booming. Inflation is cooling. It's 0.6% more than it was in the summer of 2020 at just 3.1%. Wait a second. We have American manufacturing coming back home, all because of Biden's wisdom, because of his temperance, his capacity to lead in a bipartisan manner, which is an underrepresented point. And so I have great confidence moving forward. So the answer is absolutely. All in terms of the next 4 years of Joe Biden.
These voters, though, are not complaining about his record. They're talking about concerns about his ability to beat Trump, who you've called a lightning, a threat, essentially, to the democracy. But in private, we've heard a lot of his allies say publicly, in private, he is strong. He's in command.
Yeah.
He's forceful. Does he need to do more to show?
I think he's doing everything he needs to do. I mean, he's got an extraordinary record. He's doing everything he needs to do on Ukraine at the moment. He's doing everything he needs to do to reconcile and wrestle some common sense as it relates to a bipartisan approach to address the issue of the border, where the Republicans couldn't take yes for an answer because they don't want to make that a political issue. He is leading. And so, no, from my humble perspective, not only the last 3 years have been extraordinary. I've been out with, as you know, on the campaign trail. I was just out in California. I've seen him up close. I've seen him from far. But here's my point. It's because of his age that he's been so successful. It's because of the wisdom and the character that's developed over years that we have the CHIPS and Science Act, the Infrastructure Bill, and the PACT Act, and the Safer Communities Act. And because we've seen these bipartisan accomplishments, because of his capacity of understanding, because of his leadership. So the opportunity to express that for 4 more years, what a gift it is for the American people. And as a Democrat, what a gift for me to make the case for the leader of our party, Joe Biden.
This guy is completely, that is the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Keep in mind, he has decimated the West Coast. Look what their policies have turned Los Angeles into, San Francisco into. he's the one, you know, total lockdown during COVID. He's the one, the voice you just heard, Gavin Newsom. He's the governor who essentially, they're giving free health care to illegals. They're driving companies out of California. Their oppressive actions towards businesses and the public during COVID. Make no mistake about it, though. He is ready to run. And he wants to make sure he front and center. And if something happens that the president decides he's not going to run, which, by the way, I don't think that's going to happen. I know a lot of people think that. I don't see it. And I'll tell you why. They truly believe, the president, the first lady, his sister, the cabinet, his chief of staff, certainly his inner circle, they believe that they can beat President Trump in November. They think that. I didn't say it's, I don't think it's going to happen, but they think that. Therefore, they're not leaving. I think that's number one. Number two, he stays in the race at least through June, and then he has all the delegates. That's important. That's really what it comes down to. I know some people think that he just one day holds a press conference and announces this person will now be. It doesn't work that way. If he would have stepped down, Vice President Harris becomes the president. So you can't just make up the rules as you go along. Do I believe Michelle Obama is waiting in the wings? No, I don't. As I've said, anyone that has spoken with her, she has no interest. She's enjoying her life. They have money. They have celebrity. They travel the world. She has no interest in that. Here's what I believe is driving President Biden. Is there anything that could knock him off the ballot? I think it would have to be something very serious and physical. Because I know people are encouraging and thinking he needs to sit down. His family needs to intervene. The first lady needs to intervene. His chief of staff, the sister, his brother, perhaps, whoever, anyone close to him. I don't think it's not going to happen. One thing about First Lady Jill Biden, she likes living in the White House. She likes traveling on Air Force One. They like everything that goes along with it. But what I think is driving this, I think his ultimate plan, when he thinks about legacy, here's what I believe they think would happen, which is I don't think they're planning on him actually serving out another four-year term. Let's just hear me out. Let's play this out. First of all, I don't think he can beat President Trump, but they think he can. And he keeps saying, I can beat him. I beat him in 2020. I'll beat him again. So, okay, I don't agree with that. But let's just say it is going to happen. I believe their plan would be serve 2 years. And it would be minimal. You wouldn't see him. The part-time president. He doesn't have to leave the White House. He doesn't have to go anywhere. He doesn't have to do anything. So then I think he, I believe, potentially steps down and lets, or 2 or 3 years in, lets Vice President Harris take over. And then he feels his legacy should be, because of him, he essentially anointed the first woman of color to be the president. So I don't believe they're looking at this as, number one, the re-election. Number two, then he'd have to serve the 4 years until he's age 86. He'll be 82 in November. I don't think that's the way they're thinking. But they are thinking, I believe. I mean, as we're approaching March, I mean, let's look at the calendar. March, April, May, June, July, August, October. The election is in 8 months. I think they feel it's pedal to the metal right after Labor Day. They will have a lot of money. He'll have a lot of cash. There's a lot of people that don't like President Trump. I would never vote for Biden-Harris, and I'm not convinced they can win. But I think they think that they can win, and that's why he's doing this. And he and the First Lady, they like their life. They like the power. They like everything that goes with it. They feel they're entitled to it. He feels he's earned it. He was angry in 2016 when Hillary kind of slid by him and ran against President Trump and lost. I am not convinced he's going anywhere unless it's on his terms. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. The nation horrified. The shocking killing of that young woman in Athens, Georgia. Let's hear the latest from ABC.
Jogging on a University of Georgia campus, facing a judge. ABC's Morgan Norwood has more on what we're learning about him. Morgan, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Gio. Yeah, police say Jose Ibarra and Lakin Riley didn't know each other, that this was a crime of opportunity. The charges so severe that the judge immediately denying Ibarra's bond. But this morning, we're seeing mounting questions surrounding Ibarra's immigration status. All of this as his brother faces separate charges, too.
Jose Ibarra, the suspect charged in the killing of nursing student Lakin Riley on the University of Georgia's campus, ordered to remain behind bars. The 26-year-old going before a judge on murder, aggravated assault, and kidnapping charges, and what authorities call the first homicide at UGA in nearly 30 years.
This court is not authorized under Georgia law to set bond in light of these charges.
We're also asserting his rights under the Fifth Amendment to remain silent.
Riley disappeared Thursday, her friends calling police after the former high school cross-country star never came back from her morning run. Officers finding her body hours later near the running trails at UGA, where she used to go to school. Police say security camera footage, along with community tips, led them to Ibarra.
Investigations suggest that they had no relationship. He did not know her at all. I think this was a crime of opportunity.
And this morning, new questions surrounding Ibarra's immigration status. Police revealing Ibarra is a non-U.S. resident from Venezuela. It comes as Ibarra's brother, Diego, who authorities say is undocumented, faces separate charges of his own. According to court documents, police approached Diego Ibarra because he matched the description of a homicide suspect. And when asked for ID, they say he presented a fraudulent green card. Meanwhile, a heartbroken community honoring Lakin Riley, her nearby college, Augusta University, describing her as a promising future nurse. Her sister writing on Instagram, "This isn't fair, and I will never understand it. I will miss and love you forever, Lakin."
And so though police said Jose Ibarra doesn't have an extensive criminal history, we're learning that he was arrested here in New York last year after he arrived in the city from the Texas border. He was charged with operating a moped without a license and child endangerment, as police say his son was riding without head protection or restraint.
Truly an alarming case. Still a lot of questions, too, Morgan.
No question. Now, folks, this is something I believe that Governor McKee is going to have to deal with this week. I was surprised more was not made of the story on some of the Sunday shows. I'm not sure, and I don't know why, that more was not made of it, because I think it's one of those stories that breaks through. I think I believe this could end up being a Willie Horton type of story that would impact the election. I have no idea why there wasn't more discussion on that on the Sunday shows. So, but I, there was no reason for him to be in the country. Now, this week, I am hoping that the Republicans at the Rhode Island State House keep the pressure on Governor McKee for him to clarify what is the state's position when it comes to illegal immigration and whether or not he's running a sanctuary state. Now, I don't expect that Governor McKee is going to be straightforward and forthcoming. He'll probably try to dance around it. He'll try to, I would imagine, try to pretend that the state's not running a sanctuary state. But it is a sanctuary state, and it's very simple. It's because if you have agencies that report to the governor that are not cooperating with ICE, what else would you call that? Now, I believe Governor McKee is going to try to say, well, we're not, and blah, 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 and try to point and distract and try to come away and frustrate people. And, well, you know, we're not, but we're going to have our people take a look at it. And he'll try to dance around it. But the fact of the matter is, you have states that cooperate with ICE, and then you have the states that don't. And the states that don't are the ones that are, in fact, housing illegals. And illegals come to Rhode Island because it is a sanctuary state, and they know no one's going to harass them, no one's going to deport them. The media turns a blind eye to it. I want to once again commend the reps at the Rhode Island State House, the Republicans anyway, that are drawing attention to the story. But look at that situation. That animal had no business being in our country or in Georgia. That girl should be alive. What an absolute disgrace. There's no reason for that. And how many more of them? We know why he killed her. He was going to try to sexually assault her. And it sure sounds as if she fought back. And then it cost her life. Does that make sense to you that a young woman goes out for a midday run? Not early morning, not late at night. A midday run. And ends up being killed, brutally killed, by someone who is not supposed to be in the country. And because of Biden-Harris, because of lax immigration laws and rules, she lost her life. It is disgraceful. It's avoidable. That he did that. This isn't an argument that some try to make, that they actually cause, you know, less deaths and so forth and per capita. It's all nonsense is what it is. That young girl should be alive. And her life was taken by someone who had no business being in this country, and a president who was absolutely asleep at the switch and allowed failed policies for that to happen. So, I mean, it is so heartbreaking in the brazenness of it. This wasn't a robbery. They didn't know each other. That animal saw this young girl running. I'm sure went to tackle her, sexually assault her. She was fighting back. And instead, he ended up killing her. So gruesome. Just disgraceful. Lakin Hope Riley. Friend told police she hadn't returned from a morning run as her body was found right at that Athens campus. Let me again pick up a little bit more from CBS. I mean, it's just so terrible, folks. I believe this is a voting issue. And I believe as a result of this, Georgia will go Republican.
CBS's Mark Strassman reports tonight on renewed concerns of safety on college campuses.
Yep.
Lakin Riley.
For Lakin Riley, an aspiring nurse, this white jacket ceremony was a rite of passage. The 22-year-old honor student was murdered as she jogged alone, jarring Athens, home of the University of Georgia.
She was a sweet girl. It's obviously devastating for my sorority. All the girls were, like, at the house crying yesterday.
Athens is your textbook college town. Lake Herrick is another option for students to jog, walk, relax. But the woods behind this lake is where police found Lakin Riley's body. Her murder, the first on this campus in 20 years.
He did not know her at all. I think this was a crime of opportunity.
Tonight, police announced they arrested 26-year-old Jose Antonio Ibarra and charged him with malice murder, felony murder, aggravated battery, and assault. Friday felt different here, edgy for many. All day, police scoured this apartment complex. Friday classes were canceled.
So definitely a fear factor.
For Georgia students like Haley Pearson and Addison Turkin.
Everyone's just in their dorm or went home, and it's just a quiet, eerie feeling.
Adidas commissioned a global survey about women joggers like Lakin Riley. 92% said they were concerned, and 51% said afraid of being physically attacked, especially now in Athens.
I've always run with a group, and part of the reason is because I don't want to run alone. And
safety.
Yeah, safety. That's number one thing.
Mark Strassman, CBS News, Athens, Georgia.
Terrible. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Make no mistake about it. President Biden is feeling pressure about the ongoing crisis at the border. Let's go to this week's Stephanopoulos. Martha Raddatz sitting in. Democrat Senator Tammy Duckworth says she would support President Biden's reported plan to use executive action, make it harder for, quote, migrants to claim asylum, and finally admitting why? Because there is a crisis at the border.
The administration is considering using executive action to make it harder for migrants to claim asylum. Would you support that?
I would support that because we do have a crisis at the border. But I also think that
it's something Donald Trump tried.
Well, you know what? Donald Trump has backed away from this. As part of that package, there was more money for a whole bunch of things, to include a worker program so that people could actually go to work while they're waiting for their case to be adjudicated. I think that is critically important, is a work permit for folks who come here and they want to work. Well, let's put them to work. I've got the ag industry is looking for workers. Retail is looking for workers. While they're waiting for their, let's allow them to work. So they're in that compromise, it's exactly that. There was stuff that fixed the border problems, but also allowed us to be humane about how we take care of the migrants who are here.
You know, this business of the migrants, keep in mind, the racket that they run is, it's very strategic. I was speaking with someone over the course of the weekend, very, very knowledgeable. So here's what happens is you have a number of them. Let's see. So once they come here, they say the refugee benefits are better for Cubans and a couple of other countries. So they get a court date, and it could be from 6 months to 6 years, which means then they can apply for asylum. Now, aside from that, once they go, they may be denied asylum, but they can remain in the country illegally. But it's difficult for them to find legal work. But they live in a sanctuary state like Rhode Island because there's no fear of deportation. So, and you have a lot of people that have come in. And that's why there's so many, also these people are making a fortune as immigration lawyers. But what happens is they don't have employment cards. So many people can't hire them. Even people that want to hire them. So it becomes even more problematic for them. And the thing about that also just comes into play is it gives you an idea of just how serious the situation is that President Biden is looking to take action on it. Because right now, what Biden and Harris have not admitted is the fact that these people are just walking into the country. There's no way to stop them from walking into the country. And it's so easy to get in, and then it's very difficult to get them out. So, and I want to play, this is also sound, Rick Klein, and they're talking about, so President Trump, as you know, won the South Carolina primary. He's going, he's just racking it up. And Rick Klein tells you why. I think this is good.
What do you see when you look at last night? Are there any warning signs for Donald Trump?
Yeah, inside a route, you do see some concerns that might be there for a Trump candidacy going forward. He's got core Republicans. We saw this in the exit polls. He won Republican voters by about 40 points last night. But independents, that's another story. And of course, this was an open primary. Anyone could vote. Nikki Haley actually carried independent voters by about 20 points. So it's one thing to win a Republican primary, but the general election is another story. And given the legal issues that he continues to face. We asked in this exit poll whether Trump would be fit to serve if he's convicted of a crime, and 61% said yes, he would be fit to serve. But check this out, 36% say no. So that's more than a third of core Republican voters who say if he is convicted, he is not fit to serve. But the exit poll also showed, I think, pretty starkly how the core argument that Haley has made against Trump just fell flat. She has been saying only I can beat Joe Biden, and is not what the exit polls show. In fact, it looks like voters are much more likely to think that Trump can beat Joe Biden than Haley.
And exit polls and past exit polls this cycle have shown just how many Republicans still believe President Biden did not legitimately win the election. How does South Carolina compare?
Yeah, once again, we see an overwhelming number. 61% of people in South Carolina believe falsely that Joe Biden did not legitimately win the election. And to me, it speaks to the MAGA takeover of the Republican Party. We saw this across issues, whether it's immigration, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's the economy. Republican voters believe what Donald Trump is saying. They like what he is talking about. They like him. And they continue to say that over and over again. And that really is what it comes down to, is that Donald Trump is popular with his base. People believe what he's saying, even when it's false.
I just don't see right now, as we're about to hit March at the end of the week, I don't see anything that stops the rematch. And Biden is as weak as can be. Now, if it is a rematch and President Trump loses again, I mean, I don't know what to think then. Then I think you even have revolt of what would be left of the Republican Party. But make no mistake about it, the Republican Party is no longer the Republican Party. It's not the same. I think some of the articles and coverage, Nikki Haley is making her pitch to a Republican Party that doesn't exist anymore. The Trump base that makes up the Republican Party, that's not the traditional Republican Party. Now, President Trump, by all accounts, with everything going his way and Biden decline, he should sweep to victory in November. I can't even imagine what's going to happen if that doesn't happen. I believe that they want to keep Biden-Harris as the ticket. I said last week, I think the Trump people should take the pedal off the metal a little bit. You don't want to do anything to change the dynamic. Biden has trouble everywhere. He has trouble in Michigan. He is obviously now trouble in Georgia. He's got trouble in a lot of different states. So let him continue to flounder. He's not going to get any better, and the age problem is not going away. The problem is the candidate. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Well, that horrendous crime that took place in Georgia, you know, it highlights a couple different issues. And one is, in fact, the danger of young girls, young women that want to jog, go for a run on their own. Many feel unsafe to do so, or they do it in groups. Now, again, you would think it's during the day and she's right near a college campus. This is not the same as someone walking down a dark alley at 3 a.m. in the morning, for crying out loud. But you'd like to think that it's safe, but it's apparently not safe. And I think it also raises the question of when people that are in the country illegally are committing crimes. So this is setting off alarms all over the country, especially on college campuses. Let's pick up. This is the latest now on the Today Show.
Hoda, good morning. That's right. Classes here at UGA resumed today for the first time since Thursday evening. And even though there's been an arrest in last week's murder, students here are still anxious. Some women telling us they refuse to walk alone. Others carrying pepper spray for the first time. All of this as there's a renewed push to address safety on campus.
This morning, tributes are growing for Lakin Riley, a 22-year-old nursing student murdered while jogging by this lake at the University of Georgia. The 26-year-old suspect, Jose Antonio Ibarra, a non-U.S. citizen from Venezuela, now charged with her murder. Police say they had no prior relationship.
This was a crime of opportunity.
Immigration officials say Ibarra was previously arrested when he illegally entered the U.S. in 2022. A year later, he was arrested in New York City for acting in a manner to injure a child less than 17. He was released both times. And just days after the UGA attack, tragedy striking another college campus. Kentucky's Campbellsville University sent into lockdown Saturday after 18-year-old student Josiah Kilman was found dead inside of his dorm room. Another student at the school, 21-year-old Charles Escalera, now charged with murder. Both had been members of the school's wrestling team. Kilman's family writing in a statement, Josiah influenced many hearts as he was a true example of compassion, kindness, and love. As yet another college campus is shaken, students are taking action. Some keeping pepper spray at the ready for the first time.
Got this from my dad. I've had it for a while, but I've honestly never felt the need to carry it until now.
A UGA student petition with roughly 25,000 signatures is also asking the school to reinstall blue emergency call boxes that were removed 20 years ago and replaced by a safety app.
Being able to just see the light itself, not having to reach into your pocket and pull out your phone and put in your password, and there's a lot more steps.
As UGA's first day back to class begins, so does the process of keeping Lakin Riley's memory alive.
She lit up every single room that she walked into.
Bianca Tiller and Riley were freshman roommates. Tiller says Riley loved to help people. She was pursuing a career in something that came naturally.
She was just the most selfless person.
Riley's funeral will be held later this week in her hometown, but students today on campus will get a chance to say their own goodbye at a campus vigil later this afternoon.
Now, again, I've noticed on social media when I've posted about this and people posting back, how dare you? You don't know what her political beliefs were. You don't know, like, none of that. That it's absolutely, you know, ridiculous that it's not a matter of, it shouldn't be a matter, I should say. It should not be a matter of political beliefs, nor should, and you know what side is doing that. That's the progressives. They don't want any light on this. They're in favor of open borders. Unfortunately, in our part of the country, we have people that, you know, two governors. You have the governor of Massachusetts, Maura Healey, that certainly has no problems running a sanctuary state, even though, and it's ridiculous, people should take illegals into their home. But they ignore and they don't want to address the safety aspect of it. Remember, as I've said in the past, progressives, they don't care about quality of life. They certainly don't care about your quality of life. Let's be very clear about that. So no, they don't care about quality of life. And Rhode Island Governor Dan McKee also runs a sanctuary state. So you have, you know, those two. The problems in New York have become a focal point. The governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, who has spent millions, and people saying, what a waste. Texas has spent $148 million busing illegals into, or migrants, into New York City. Now, as much as some people may say, what an outrageous amount, as we've talked about, when you start to put illegals into your school system, it's 10 times that amount. So where he is wise is he's made it an issue, and through his efforts has shined a light on the situation and the problem, and saying to people like the mayor of New York City that, you know, now it's your problem. It certainly isn't going to be our problem. So now Governor McKee, back from D.C., let's see how he's going to react this week. If reporters, I'm sure any reporter that catches up with him, and he's not that I'm seeing having any real media availability, but I think he'll give some carefully worded answer about blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, the reason why this state, the reason why Rhode Island and Massachusetts, why illegals reside here so much, is because they operate as sanctuary states. And they just may not be as obvious about it as, say, like a California. But the results are the same, especially in Massachusetts, really has taken a hit. But Rhode Island's not far behind. And I think what happened in Georgia is going to have, you know, more effects on other places. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Where do things stand right now with the Republican primary? Where do things stand in the race for the White House? Nikki Haley, I think the money now over the next couple of weeks is going to start to dry up. But President Trump firmly in the driver's seat. Obviously, he has won Iowa. He's won New Hampshire. He's won Nevada. And now he has won in South Carolina as well. So he's 4-0. He is just moving breakneck speed. Let's get the latest, though, on where things stand. Let's pick it up with coverage on the Today Show.
Hey, Savannah, good morning. And decisive really is the word for this victory for former President Trump in South Carolina, where he dominated Nikki Haley in nearly every key voting block, according to our exit polling. Now, Mr. Trump is trying to pivot to the general election, but Haley is hanging on, insisting Trump is unelectable in November.
This morning, former President Trump one step closer to securing the Republican nomination following his double-digit victory in South Carolina.
Wow, that is really something. This was a little sooner than we anticipated.
The former president defeated his one-time UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, in her home state, never mentioning Haley by name in his victory speech. Instead, focusing on his potential rematch with President Biden.
We're going to look at Joe Biden And we're going to look him right in the eye. He's destroying our country. And we're going to say, Joe, you're fired.
Haley, campaigning in Michigan ahead of tomorrow's primary, is vowing to fight on. Her campaign claiming it raised $1 million since polls closed in South Carolina.
Don't complain about what happens in a general election if you don't vote in this primary.
On Saturday, explaining why she's staying in the race for the long haul.
I'm not giving up this fight when a majority of Americans disapprove of both Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
While the Trump campaign attempts to shift its attention to November, Mr. Trump is facing a fierce backlash over his remarks to a group of black conservatives last Friday, saying his four criminal cases appeal to black voters.
And then I got indicted a second time, and a third time, and a fourth time. And a lot of people said that that's why the black people like me, because they have been hurt so badly and discriminated against.
Later, invoking his mugshot taken after his arrest in Georgia.
You know who embraced it more than anybody else? The black population. It's incredible. You see black people walking around with my mugshot. You know, they do shirts and they sell them for $19 a piece.
Haley says the former president's remarks are more evidence he cannot win a general election.
It's disgusting. That's the chaos that comes with Donald Trump. That's the offensiveness that's going to happen every day between now and the general election.
And just this morning, Donald Trump's consolidation of control over the Republican Party continues with RNC Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel announcing she's resigning effective next week. That's when the party is expected to install a new slate of leaders, all handpicked by Mr. Trump, including his daughter-in-law as the party's co-chair. Savannah.
All right, Garrett, thank you. Let's turn to NBC's Kristen Welker, moderator of Meet the Press. Hi, Kristen. Good morning. We just heard Nikki Haley saying she'll stay in the race. Usually a presidential campaign runs out of money, and that's how it gets out of the race. Does she have the resources to go forward, and what would the path to victory look like?
Well, Savannah, right now she says she still does have the resources to move forward. As Garrett just said, she's raised $1 million, according to her campaign, since South Carolina. But some major donors have begun to pull out, including the Koch brothers. But look, her path, Savannah, is narrow at best. Her campaign argues, look, there are a number of open primary states, including Michigan, on Tuesday that are going to vote, meaning that Democrats and independents can vote in those primaries. 11 of the 16 states that vote on Super Tuesday or open or semi-open primary states. But look, this is a Republican primary. So in order to win, she's got to start winning over more Republican voters. And Savannah, even if she picks off one or a few of those states, it's hard to see her catching up with Donald Trump when it comes to the delegate count. Now, in terms of Trump, we've been talking to aides and allies of the former president who say, look, after South Carolina, it is time for him to start focusing on a more general election message, focus less on personal grievances and more on the issues. Because, of course, in a primary, talking about his personal grievances has really energized the base. But his allies are concerned that could turn off moderates, could turn off independents. And as Garrett noted, he didn't mention Nikki Haley's name in his speech on Saturday night. That was really notable. Will he listen? He's an unconventional candidate. I wouldn't hold your breath. We'll have to see what happens.
Okay. And then to Washington, here we go again, a potential government shutdown just days away. How's this going to play out?
Well, I've been talking to sources on both sides of the aisle, Savannah, who say with each passing day, a partial government shutdown becomes increasingly likely. That would mean thousands of government workers wouldn't get paid. Some critical food aid services could be halted, and it could even lead to some travel delays. The president has called all four congressional leaders to the White House on Tuesday. Still a lot of sticking points. And here's the rub. The Republican House Speaker, Mike Johnson, is proposing a potential short-term plan. He'd have to work with Democrats, though, Savannah, at this point, to get that done. Let's remember that former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy worked with Democrats to try to avert a government shutdown, and that's how he lost his job, Savannah. We'll see how it plays.
You know, again, that was the today. If you're Nikki Haley, I don't see what's the reason why you drop. I don't think she drops out. I think you just stay in. Just in case. President Biden has a challenger, this guy Dean Phillips. So I know everyone's calling for them to jump out of the race. It's still February. So if you're Nikki Haley, I don't see why she drops out. If you just stay in, if anything were to happen, almost like being, you know, the runner-up, and then if the winner can't fulfill, for whatever reason, their duties, then you step in. She's the only one that is in the race. She's the only one that's getting delegates. And there's always the ability to look ahead to the next election. She's certainly young enough. She could run in, I mean, it's so far away, but she could certainly run in 28. But I think they both stay in. You really have nothing to lose. All right, so she's not winning, but you might as well just play it out. As far as Biden, I don't think he's leaving the race. He is stubborn. They feel, whether or not he would serve a full four-year term if he were to win, I don't think he'd win. I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he's capable of it. I think he's struggling right now. I think at the condition he's in, I think 6 months from now, who knows what he's up to. But there are no debates. He will not debate Trump. So it's really just getting out there and getting him campaigning or sending his surrogates out, probably. But certainly neither man is going to leave the race. I think Biden stays in. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show.